I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
Once upon a time, in a mythical place called Cape Kennedy, an astronaut named Tony Nelson went up on a space mission. The missile went up, but something went wrong, and they had to bring it down. Captain Nelson landed on an island in the South Pacific, where he found a bottle. At least it looked like a bottle, but it didn't act like a bottle. Because in it was a genie. Oh, not your average everyday genie, but a beautiful genie who could grant any wish.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the classic 1960s fantasy comedy, I Dream of Jeannie. Jeannie herself, Barbara Eden, will join us to discuss her memoir entitled Jeannie Out of the Bottle and help navigate this particular excursion into the annals of classic television. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we are honored to welcome a television legend, singer, dancer, actress, comedian, and author, Miss Barbara Eden. Miss Eden's remarkable career spans over 50 years and includes hundreds of TV and movie roles and appearances. However, Barbara Eden is certainly best known for creating a character that has transcended generations and has entertained literally millions of people around the world. The legendary and iconic Jeannie in the Bottle on the classic TV series, I Dream of Jeannie. Over the next few segments, the remarkable Barbara Eden will not only help us explore virtually every aspect of her television career, but will also discuss her entertaining, enlightening, and touching memoir, Jeannie Out of the Bottle. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to open up your bottle, feel free to fold your arms and blink as we slip from the restraints of the present and enter a rather magical past. Barbara, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Barbara, I understand that you were born in Tucson, but you grew up in San Francisco. What were those early years like for you as a little girl growing up?
Oh, I had a wonderful childhood. Wonderful. The reason I was born in Tucson is because my grandfather, the family's all from California and San Francisco and Nevada. But during the Depression, Grandpa, who was a builder and a developer, went broke in Arizona. So my mother went to high school in Arizona, married my father, and I was born there.
So what were your parents like, your mom and dad?
My mother and dad were very young, very young, and they were children of the Depression. They really grabbed the moment. They enjoyed life. They didn't save a penny, unfortunately, but they really enjoyed their marriage, their life, their family. And maybe that's a pretty good way to go. I don't know.
Well, they didn't save a penny, probably because they couldn't.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. They couldn't. It was my dad worked for the telephone company. He called it Ma Bell.
Right.
And of course, when I was about, I guess I was 9 or 10, my mom went to work. And my grandmother came to live with us and took care of me. But it was, they didn't have a lot of pennies to spend, really.
So is that why you're so frugal and conservative when it comes to money matters?
Am I frugal? I don't know.
or at least careful.
Careful. I say careful, yes.
How much influence did your mom have on you as a young girl and even as an adult?
Oh, my mother had a huge influence on me, as did my grandmother and my aunt. My mom was a lot of fun, and very, very wise.
So when you were a girl, you did some singing. How did that begin?
Well, the singing began when I was very small.
Right.
My mom always sang. My grandpa always sang. There was music in the house. It was always classical. But we always sang. When I did the dishes with my mother, she would harmonize with me, and we'd sing. And that progressed to singing in church. I was in the choir, Sunday school choir, and my big ambition was to get into the grown-up choir, which I did when I was about 11 or 12. They put me in the adult choir, which was that was wonderful. I was so proud of myself. And from there, I studied singing at the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco, and then began to sing with dance bands around the area when I was about 16.
Was there a catalyst moment for you that made you say, this is it, this is what I'm going to pursue in my life, as you were progressing along the path of learning your craft?
I don't think there was a moment, any one moment, no. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it really happened when my mother thought I should study acting to augment my singing. She said, you know, Barbara, you're singing every note perfectly, but you don't mean a word you're singing. I think you should study some acting. And so I did. Luckily, I met Miss Holloway at the Elizabeth Holloway School of the Theater. She gave college credit at the time I was going to City College, and I just liked it. I liked it a lot. It just happened, you know. I was still singing, but acting was really good for me. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the characters.
Now, eventually, you made the decision to move to Hollywood. What precipitated that?
Elizabeth Holloway did.
Mm-hmm.
She called me into the office one day and said, Barbara, there's no point in your continuing your education here. You need to work. And I was already Actors Equity. I had worked on stage in San Francisco, but she thought I should go either to New York or to Los Angeles. And since I had my aunt and uncle living in Los Angeles,
right.
I chose LA. Although they lived in San Marino, which is miles in all ways from Hollywood.
Now, when you got to Hollywood, you got a gig at the famed nightclub Ciro's. What did you learn there?
I learned I didn't belong there.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. But I did learn that I could do it. It certainly gives you courage when you do something that's uncomfortable and not really your thing.
Right.
And you get through it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was, how many weeks did I make it? I don't know, before they fired me. But, you know, I did it. So I had a sense of accomplishment, even though it was uncomfortable.
Well, around that same time, you appeared on an episode of I Love Lucy, as we'll hear in the following clip.
Hi!
Cousin Diana Jordan.
This is Mr. and Mrs. Ricky Ricardo.
Hello.
How do you do? Well, did we miss anything? Have you been having fun?
Yes, it's been a lot of fun, but we were just leaving because the boys are so tired.
What? Hey,
it's late.
We just got here.
Oh, now, wait a minute. My mother told me to pick you. Your country club is simply fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
The music's so dreamy.
You like to dance?
Oh, but yes, I adore it.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
Barbara, tell us about your experience with Lucy on I Love Lucy.
I'll choose you and you. Yes. That was one of the most wonderful experiences of my life, of my working life. She couldn't have been nicer to me or more interested in how I did the job and what I looked like. She wanted to sign me to a contract. Unfortunately, I could not sign with her because it was only my third film job in Hollywood. And while I was there, I received the phone call from 20th Century Fox. I had already tested at Fox, and they picked up my option. So I went to Fox. But being with Lucy was wonderful.
Well, also in the same year, you landed your own television series, How to Marry a Millionaire, as we'll hear in this clip.
This picture, Local. What kind of a part are you getting?
Oh, it's just a small part. Not very much. I get killed right near the beginning. Well, you know, one of those murder mysteries. It takes place in China. Oh, I play a dancing girl. You see, I stow away on a ship.
What's the name of this picture?
Shanghai Blues.
Shanghai Blues?
Well, it's a musical detective story.
Barbara, tell us about How to Marry a Millionaire. What kind of series was it, and what part did you play?
Well, I played the Marilyn Monroe part. It had been a movie. And I played Loco Jones. I didn't land it, actually. It was I was under contract to Fox, and it was their show. And they were trying to start a third network. So this was one of the shows they put on their Fox network, interestingly enough, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but it was great. I learned camera on that show. It was an intense course in filmmaking and the best thing in the world for me because mostly I had done stage work, and, of course, the television work I did was live mm-hmm. in front of an audience with Lucy and It's Always Jan, and I had only worked in front of audiences, not cameras. So this was good for me, good for me.
When you say you learned camera, what does that mean exactly?
Well, first of all, you learn to hit your mark. That's what people have to do because the camera is the focal point of the whole set. So they light for you to be in a certain spot. So you have to be in that spot for the camera and still make your work convincing and real. It becomes second nature once you do it. And the sound, of course, you learn you have to sometimes wear little body packs, which aren't comfortable, but you do if the boom mic can't reach you.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of lucky because I had done stage work, so I articulate pretty clearly. And for sound, you have to do that. Nowadays, I guess you can mumble a lot, but I resent it when actors mumble. I want to hear what they're saying. You can give the impression you're mumbling without totally losing the text and what the writer has written.
William Shatner once said that he related to the camera as a living, breathing human being.
Yes, yes, I do too.
So you're able to do that?
Oh, yes.
Amazing.
Oh, yes. It's like a person there. It's just you're talking to another person, or not, or you ignore him, you know.
So a few years later, you met Marilyn Monroe, ironically, because you played her role on How to Marry a Millionaire on the TV series.
That's right.
Tell us about that experience and what Marilyn was like as a person.
Well, I had met, I had a stand-in. Named Evelyn Moriarty, a lovely woman. And she had been with me since How to Marry a Millionaire and went with me when I did the films at Fox. And while we were at Fox, she was asked to also work with Marilyn. And Evie was from back east. I'm not sure where exactly, but she'd say, Barbara, I have another star. And I said, oh, great. She said, yes, you've got to meet her, Marilyn. She's my other star. And so one day we were working on 5 weeks in a Balloon. That was with Peter Lorre, who I adored. She came over to me and said, Barbara, my other star wants to meet you. And I said, well, I can't leave, Evelyn. You know, we're doing this. I can't leave the movie. She said, That's all right. I fixed it up. You're going. She grabbed my hand and dragged me over to the next stage. Now, at Fox, these stages were and are huge buildings, and they're soundproof. You don't hear an airplane when you're inside. They're wonderful places to work. And she dragged me onto this dark, dark stage where this little pinpoint of light was, with a cameraman, the Sidney Gellaroff, the hairstylist, Jean-Louis, the designer, and the director were there with the cameraman, and what they were doing were tests with Marilyn. And Marilyn came out of her dressing room, and Evie grabbed me and said, Marilyn, I want you to be my other star. And I almost died, you know. And she was so sweet. She was lovely. It was, oh, Barbara, she talked like that. I mean, she really did, and everything about her glowed. She was a lovely, beautiful woman.
So meeting her in person was like seeing her on the screen.
Yes, it really was.
Amazing.
Indeed it was.
Well, Barbara, a couple years earlier, you met and worked with another legend, Elvis Presley. What kind of guy was Elvis? How did he strike you?
I'm trying to think if that was, I guess it was before Marilyn, wasn't it? Elvis was a delight to work with. First of all, he was a very good actor, and he wanted to be a good actor. He cared about what he did. He wasn't taking it with a grain of salt just because he was famous and people loved him and loved his voice. He wanted to act. This movie was a Western. I spent a great deal of time with him sitting while they were setting up, because we'd be out in what was then called Conejo Ranch. Now I think there are a lot of houses out there. But he had his father there, and he had his cousins.
Who were?
I really thought they were his cousins.
And they weren't really.
No. But they'd play their guitars and sing, and it was a wonderful time. Elvis was a gentleman. I'd walk on the set. He'd stand up immediately, get me a chair. He was very well-bred. It was like my husband. My husband would not think of not getting up for a woman when she walks into a room.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And Elvis was the same way. We talked about many, many, many things, about the fact that he was very interested in a young girl in Germany. Now, he didn't tell me how young, you know.
Right.
But he wanted to know how my husband and I, at the time I was married to Michael Ansara, who was an actor and a very good one and worked a lot. And he said, how do you do it, the two of you? You go in different directions. And I said, well, it's a business just like anything else, and we both know it. That's all. It doesn't get in our way at all. His father was there. I didn't talk to him a lot, though, mostly Elvis. It was a wonderful, wonderful movie, actually a good movie. He played a half-breed. He didn't get the girl. He died.
Wow.
And he didn't sing a song. And it didn't make a penny.
I can see why.
And they brought us back, and I think he sang one song in it, in the kitchen. He played a guitar and sang a song. And my gosh, he was good. Whew. It's wonderful. So he went. He chose the path, I guess, that he should have been on. But he wanted to be an actor. He really wanted to.
Well, we're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with Barbara Eden, author of her memoir, Genie Out of the Bottle, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.